Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. Today, we are reading the last three chapters of Pride and Prejudice for the second time because we did this recording already and it was not good. So we're doing it again because we don't want it to feel like nails on a chalkboard as you listen to us in our final episode. So hopefully, this is a better recording because I don't think we're going to do it for a third time if it's not good. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology and I have read all of Jane Austen. And I am joined by
Teresa, and I have a background in social work, and I can officially say I have read one Jane Austen book. I'm very pleased with myself. This has been an excellent journey, and yeah, now I can say I've read Jane Austen. I guess I'll keep reading because we're doing this podcast.
Are you okay to say that you're a fan of Jane Austen now?
I am. I don't know if I'd quantify myself as a Janeite yet, but I think some of that is that I don't feel like I can enter into the fandom without getting spoilers about other things. And so part of our format is that I've never read any of this, so I don't feel like I can engage with the community in the same way that like fandom level would have me. So I am a fan of Jane Austen. I don't know if I'm a Janeite yet.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But the more we get into it, I'm sure the more it will. I do get some Pride and Prejudice stuff that shows up on my like For You page. So at least my phone has been listening in and knows that we're talking about Pride and Prejudice.
Mean, your phone probably is also collecting data on the fact that you've run an Austin Therapy podcast
I mean,
Instagram account.
yes, which has been largely based on Pride and Prejudice. So that is probably why I'm getting Pride and Prejudice stuff. But I try not to look at it because I don't want to spoil things. But now I can look at all the Pride and Prejudice stuff because I've read it and I know how it ends. So here we are. Are we diving right in? Last three chapters. Is everyone ready? Buckled up?
Whoop, whoop.
Here we go.
What were thoughts on chapter 59?
I really liked chapter 59. I both liked and was like, oh, poor Lizzie. I really liked Jane's response in this within context. Yes, I wanted Jane to be all like, this is amazing, you're getting married. And instead, her response is like, this is a joke. You're not getting married to this guy. What are you talking about?
Jane's response was, "What the fuck?"
Oh, 100%. But what I appreciate about the response is that it does bring out again that sisterly bond. It feels very protective from Jane's perspective in this of I want to make sure you're marrying this guy because you actually really love him and everything you've said about him has told me that you don't. So I really need to confirm that this is how you feel. I appreciate that through this entire book, we've talked a lot about sisters and their relationship. And I appreciate that Jane's the first person that Lizzie tells. I recognize that Lizzie's like, you're supposed to be the easy one, and this is not easy. So I feel bad for Lizzie in that sense. But I love their bond. I love their sisterly bond. I think it's really cute.
I do like we get her talking to Jane, the tongue-in-cheek moments now where Darcy and Elizabeth are together, but nobody else knows, and they're like, "Where could you have been walking to?" And Lizzie's like, and that Jane and Bingley are sitting there being all like, "I love you." And Darcy and Elizabeth are just giving each other awkward turtle eyes across the room and just being two nervous, anxious bunnies. It's a perfect example of how the relationships have flowed, that Bingley and Jane have very much been in the public. The love has been easy. The people interfering in the love has not been easy. Whereas Darcy and Elizabeth's story has been extremely private. Nobody really knows what's going on except those two. Like, even the gardeners who got to witness some of it were still kind of not wanting to breach or mention anything. They weren't entirely sure.
Well, they think it's a secret engagement, and so they're like, well, keep your secret, but like, there's something going on there, right? Maybe, but we're not sure. Lizzie, what's going on here?
So I think that's like a really sweet example of Jane and Bingley are the ones who are sweet puppy dogs and are super out and probably couldn't hide the fact that they were in love. And Elizabeth and Darcy are awkward turtles.
Yeah. Well, and I love this line in here. I actually circled it. Elizabeth, agitated and confused, rather knew that she was happy than felt herself to be so. And there's something in that, I think, because things have been so secretive, and it goes on to say, like, she knows what's lying ahead of her of having to tell everyone, that sometimes you know something, but it's really hard to access that feeling because she's still in that secretive place. Lizzie can't just walk into the room and be like, I'm the happiest in the world! Because everyone would be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Right. It's like when you're at the start of things and everything's almost lined up. And it's that anticipatory, you've got the last few barriers that you have to go through. So you're like, I'm not going to be happy until I know that everything's all together. But you can feel it almost behind that wall. You can feel it's there.
It's that anticipatory excitement of when things will be out in the open and it will be good. But getting there might still be painful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she tells Jane. And Jane is flabbergasted.
Yeah, you are joking, Lizzie. This cannot be. Engaged to Mr. Darcy? No, no, you shall not deceive me. I know it is impossible.
This is a wretched beginning indeed.
Just the language in this, you can just feel their shock and how hard this is for everyone to comprehend. And I just love that response of, okay, this is an April Fool's joke, right? Like, this can't be real. You're pulling a fast one on me.
Yeah.
Like, ha ha, you're so funny. What?
And then, of course, you can tell from the way that Lizzie's going back and forth, Lizzie is teasing, right? And she's laughing. She's like, oh my God, okay, this is how we're starting. And that doesn't lend Jane to believe her. Lizzie's not being serious, which Lizzie isn't. Lizzie is serious, but she's not stern in terms of her personality.
She's not frank like Lady Catherine.
Yeah. So I think it's so cute, the amount of convincing that she has to do. And the fact that she's still trying to be playful of like, we will be the happiest couple in the world. I love him more than I love Bingley. I have to date my first loving him to when I first saw the grounds at Pemberley. Like, she's doing all of this joking, which again, Jane is like, okay, but are you really in love?
Jane asks her like 12 times in this, are you sure? Is this really what you want? Wait. Are you sure? Jane just keeps checking in to be like, this doesn't make sense. I need to check with you again. None of this feels logical.
Yeah.
And as a reader, part of it feels a little hard in that, like, we know the inside. It's Darcy and Lizzie and us as readers in this, like, triangle, this little bubble who get to know things. And everyone else has been left out of this bubble. So as a reader, sometimes it is a little hard to remember, like, oh yeah, these people don't know. And even, I know I talked about this in the last episode, that I thought Bingley probably knew by now. And Jane's like, Bingley and I talked about it, and we thought it would be impossible. So even Bingley didn't know, which was kind of my prediction. A couple people must know by now. No one knows.
Which I think is really interesting, either that Bingley has been so preoccupied in his love for Jane that he hasn't watched Darcy making moon eyes at Elizabeth, or that Bingley knows that Elizabeth has rejected Darcy and that it's completely off the table, and he hasn't picked up that Lizzie's making moon eyes at Darcy. I wonder where the impossibility from Bingley's perspective comes from.
Well, and I imagine in this time period, it's not common for someone to propose more than once. So if Lizzie's already rejected him, and if Bingley knows that, then it seems unlikely that he would propose again.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's where it lies. That feels more logical for Bingley not knowing. But it might also just be that Bingley's just been blind to it, and he's got that puppy right. dog energy. He's very in the moment in his life.
And I wonder if he's also had the same sort of experience that Jane has had throughout this novel of he and Jane separated, and Jane got super depressed, and then Bingley went to London and he was super depressed. So that's why he hasn't been observing anything except himself, because he's been in a deep depression until he found Jane again.
Right.
We knew he was sort of happy to see Lizzie, but I wonder if that's also a piece of why he hasn't been paying attention to his best bud.
Makes sense. And also then in that time period when he gets back together with Jane, they're just so enamored with each other. So he's not paying attention to it either. But they had been discussing it. So yeah, we could wonder for a really long time about what did or didn't they suspect or know. As far as I can tell, though, from everyone's response in this chapter to Lizzie announcing her engagement, everyone is floored by it because they all thought she hated Darcy. There's not a ton of guesswork as to how Darcy felt towards her. No one's saying, like, but that man hates you. And it is because we're telling her family. I get that they'd be more focused on her feelings, but it is interesting that, like, people aren't saying the two of you hate each other, but rather, Lizzie, you really hate him.
Right. People often talk about enemies to lovers that, for the most part, Lizzie saw Darcy as an enemy, and Darcy very rarely saw Lizzie as an enemy. So it was a one-sided enemies to lovers, because Darcy was always like, puppy, puppy. I do also think Jane has the context of Darcy having proposed before.
True.
And so she has that context of knowing. And we, like you said, we don't get anyone else's reaction. So I wonder if Darcy's been a little more forthcoming about his feelings to people around him, or less forthcoming in that, from what we do know of the talking behind Elizabeth's back that happened, the worst thing that Darcy has basically said is that she was not pretty enough to tempt him. Tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me. That's like the worst thing that he said about Lizzie. Caroline would try and do digs at her, and he would try and sidestep things. He's never bashed Lizzie, from what we know, in a private context. So I also think that added layer of Darcy hasn't been as prejudiced as Lizzie.
Lizzie has been very vocal about disliking this guy.
She enjoyed it.
But yeah, it's hilarious to her. And we even see her in the next chapter teasing him about him falling in love with her and how horrible she was to him through all of that. But before we get there, Darcy and Bingley come back to the house, and Mrs. Bennet's reaction, I just wrote, oh, Mrs. B. If that disagreeable Mr. Darcy is not coming here again with our dear Bingley, she's so upset that Darcy is coming and creates this whole plan of, okay, you and Kitty are going to have to walk with this guy so that Jane and Bingley can have their time together because he's so horrible. No one wants to spend time with him. I can't spend time with him. So I'm going to feed you like a lamb to this lion. Go and take care of him. I'm sorry. That's how it's going to have to be.
And Lizzie has pretty much the same reaction that we do, where she laughs like, this is perfect. I get to hang out with my fiance, my secret fiance. But she's also annoyed with her mom. Oh my God, Mrs. B, just be nice.
Right. You don't have to be so rude. You could just be a little bit nicer. And Bingley does a really good job here wingmanning them in getting Kitty out of the picture so that the two of them can walk together. Kitty doesn't want to go for this walk. It's far too long. Kitty's like, yeah, I don't want to go on this walk. This sounds horrible. He sets it up so that Lizzie and Darcy can be alone together, which is really sweet.
Yeah, Bingley stepping in there, and I love the like warm handshake and him coming into the room. You can just like see him smiling and happy for Lizzie, and that Jane and Bingley get to be in on the secret. It's so sweet and so cute.
And it's also funny to me that Mrs. Bennet has spent this entire book trying to get her daughters married by really horrible means. Like, she's embarrassed everyone, including herself, in her attempts to match up her daughters. And here she is, really not wanting to match her daughter with this man, and is secretly wingmanning them and doesn't know it. It's a hilarious way to kind of end that endeavor for Mrs. Bennet to get her daughters married.
I will say, on that sort of subject, in terms of Mrs. Bennet pushing her daughters towards marriage, it is interesting that in this scheming that she has, she has followed along with Elizabeth saying that she will never want to marry Darcy and hasn't tried to push any of her daughters towards him, even though he's the richest guy in the book.
He's the richest guy, but also, in her opinion, the most disagreeable guy.
Right. But I think that that's a good reflection on the fact that even though Mrs. Bennet is super annoying and not always the best parent, she doesn't want her daughters to be with dicks.
I mean, she did really want Lizzie to marry Collins. So there's a little asterisk on that of maybe the type of dick that she would partner them with. Because I think she actually kind of likes Collins. So if she thinks they're a dick.
She wants her children to be friendly with people that she can be friendly with.
Yes.
Anyway, it was just like a little bit of a layer of kind of like she isn't throwing Lizzie towards Darcy in the same sort of like get married sort of way, even though it's worked out better than she could have ever hoped.
Right. She's throwing Lizzie at him as get him away from me, get him out of this house. And it's turned into, oh, you're actually going to get married, which is just hilarious. And then Darcy gets to talk to Mr. Bennet and ask for his permission. And I love that he comes back in and just kind of walks over and whispers, go talk to your dad. He wants to talk to you. And Lizzie's like, all right, off to talk to my dad.
They're so smooth.
So smooth.
But I mean, maybe they are, because nobody else seems to be paying attention to the fact that Darcy, who supposedly hates Lizzie in everybody's minds, is paying so much attention to her, whispers over her shoulder, and Lizzie just puts down her work and leaves, and nobody pays attention to it.
Well, and also the fact that he like went to talk to her father. He doesn't actually have any reason to be talking to Mr. Bennet, who, what we know of him is he's the guy who wants to be left alone with his books. Gentlemen aren't coming into the home out of their way to be like, I gotta have a conversation with that guy, unless they're asking for marriage.
It's an odd and really cute, awkward turtle exchange. I wonder how much Kitty and Mary are sitting back and observing things. I really wonder what Mary is watching. Throughout all of this, we don't get much of Mary being like, but I do wonder if Mary's sitting back and judging everyone.
Mary is the perfect fly on the wall because she seemingly doesn't pay attention to anyone or anything else and just reads her books. But I could also see her being that person who like behind her book is like, oh yeah, that's happening. Mm-hmm. And like going back to her book and just keeping all of that to herself. She would make a great investigative journalist or something, or like a good spy.
She would, but I get the impression that she mostly sits back and then judges people.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I don't think there's much investigating that's going on. She's just literally judging people. So, yeah, she goes to her father directly in the library, and he says, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, and he's confused. Don't you hate this guy? He has the same reaction Jane had, which is, what is wrong with you? Have you lost your mind? You hate him. Why are you marrying him?
Yeah. Are you marrying him just for his money? Because I get that you think that nobody else is going to come and propose to you, but there will be other proposals. It's okay.
I love that he points out, like, he is rich to be sure, and you may have more fine clothes and fine carriages than Jane, but will they make you happy? And I wrote down, those things won't, but Darcy will. If Darcy was poor, Lizzie would probably still be marrying him.
I don't know if she would.
You don't think so?
I don't know if she would because I don't know if they would have interacted. Obviously, the story would be completely different, but it would have been a much harder thing to contemplate.
Right. I guess I should clarify. Not dirt poor, but if he wasn't the richest guy in the book, just kind of mediocrely did okay.
Yeah.
Lizzie would still be marrying him. That's not a factor for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's trying to remind her not to marry without affection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a really sweet thing that despite, again, Mr. Bennet being checked out, that both Jane and Mr. Bennet are tuned in enough to Elizabeth to know what she actually values and that they respect that and they want that for her. I think that that basically, if Jane and Mr. Bennet had been just like, oh yeah, sure, this makes sense, it would feel wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wouldn't feel like they were actually close with Lizzie.
Well, yeah, because they wouldn't know her. And I appreciate that he recognizes you don't want to be in an unequal marriage. And I wonder if that's a reflection of him being in an unequal marriage. Him and Mrs. Bennet are never on the same footing. And not wanting that for Lizzie, wanting her to be in an equal marriage where she respects the person that she's with.
My child, let me not have the grief of seeing you unable to respect your partner in life.
It's really sweet. It's very thoughtful. And it's interesting that he says he wouldn't dare refuse anything from Mr. Darcy and giving him the consent. I also consent to you, Lizzie. It is a little bit of that power dynamic shift in this era of he's also recognizing Lizzie has the right to refuse this. And
if you don't want this, I will make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah, like I will back you. which he's done before for her. I really appreciate that.
And I like that she puts down her joking and she's solemn with her dad and basically tries to explain Darcy's good qualities and why she likes him and how everything has changed. And I could not have parted with you, my Lizzie, to anyone less worthy. It's him acknowledging that, okay, fine, you like this guy, he's not a complete dick, and he's met the bare minimum requirement for me to be okay with you getting married.
He might think there's someone better out there, but at least he's hitting that minimum.
And then she tells him about what Darcy did for Lydia.
And his response is so cringe and comical in this of like, oh good, now I don't have to pay that money back. This saves me a world of trouble and economy. I wrote down,
oh God,
this feels accurate.
I think it's definitely an accurate reflection of Mr. Bennet being like, hey, I don't have to pay back now. But also from a romantic perspective, if he did pay Darcy back, the gesture loses all of its qualities. Like, it's no longer a big romantic gesture if your dad paid me back for it.
It becomes a financial gesture. And I appreciate that he's like, I'll offer to pay him back, but I know he's not going to take the money.
He will rant and storm about his love for you, and there will be an end of the matter. I love that there is going to be an off-page interaction between the two of them, where he's like, by the way, thank you for saving my other daughter's reputation, kind of, and helping financially so that her life isn't completely horrible. How much do I owe you? And Darcy to be like, no, never. And just anytime that there's an off-page Darcy emotional reaction, it just makes me giggle because Darcy's going to be the most awkward turtle. He's not going to be like, no, never. But internally, that might be what he's feeling. He'll be like, it's fine. That's Darcy ranting.
Yes. And Mr. Bennet will just accept that it's fine. I think it's funny because when we heard about the discussions between Mr. Gardner and Mr. Darcy about paying for it, they had a back and forth of like, no, I'm paying for it. No, I'm paying for it. Mr. Ben is just going to be like, okay, great. And leave it at that. And they will never talk about it again. I'm certain.
I hope that Darcy can have a little bit of that playfulness with Mr. Bennet that it seems like he had with Mr. Gardner.
I don't think they'll ever get there.
I don't know. So we'll talk about that when we review chapter 61. Then Mr. Bennet teases Lizzie about Collins's letter.
Oh, Collins's letters. Just horrible. And I'm glad that Mr. Bennet can just laugh it off. And he's in a great spirit, too, at the end of this. If any young men come for Mary or Kitty, send them in, for I am quite at leisure. And it just makes me laugh that he's like, well, I've got three daughters married in 1 year. Let's see if we can get the other two married off.
Well, I think there's also a bit of comedy in this because this is completely out of left field. He's like, well, if another random dude wants to walk in and tell me that he's had a secret affair with my daughter, sure. Because that's essentially what's happened with Darcy.
It's so true. And as far as we know, Mary and Kitty don't have any suitors. But who knows? I mean, Mary could be secretly judging people in the corner and also have someone like hiding out that no one's paying attention to her. So it could be a good fan fiction.
Yeah, her old lady companion.
Yes. Be nice if she was queer. I just want all of them to be queer, though. So
maybe everyone's just bi.
Yeah, be nice. And then Lizzie tells her mother this line, chef's kiss, so perfect. Mrs. Bennet sat quite still and unable to utter a syllable. For the woman who has something to say all the time to be rendered speechless, I love it. It's just perfect. She's so shocked she can't say anything.
That stunned silence that you never expected Mrs. Bennet to have.
Which just feels so good at this point in the book. She goes on to be like, how lovely your life is going to be, and even Jane's life isn't going to compare to that. I'm so pleased. I'm so happy. Such a charming man, so handsome. Well, your tune changed real fast there. And it just shows her fickle nature of like, yep, that's Mrs. Bennet. She is going to roll with the tides and sometimes roll against them for whatever she's feeling like.
Yeah, but she is thankfully still too scared of Darcy to say much.
She does ask Lizzie to apologize for her for being so rude, which is sweet. She could recognize, oh, I've maybe been a little off-putting in this situation. I did have a question in here. She talks about needing a special license, and I just don't know what that is or what that means.
So a special license is, there's different ways that you can get married. You could either post about it, and then you had to get married within 90 days in one of the parishes. You could get a common license, and then you had to get married in one of the spouse's parishes. Or you can get a special license, which is you pay more money for it. It's directly from the archbishop, and it is what nobility and rich people get. And it means you can marry wherever you want, whenever you want. It's a sign of status.
It's the fancy people's marriage license.
Yes. And Darcy is enough of that sphere that he would get a special license. I don't know if he would need one, but he could get one.
Okay. And do people get them because they need it or because it's that status symbol of we got married with a special license?
I think it's bits and pieces of both, because for specific marriages, specifically within nobility, you would have had to get consent from the monarch to be able to wed. So the special license puts you in an upper class, and that there are different rules within that upper class of who can get married and when they can get married and whose consent they need.
Got it. But they don't need royalty's consent because he's not nobility.
Yeah, so this would just be a status thing.
Makes very much sense why Mrs. Bennet is pushing for it, because she's all about status and thinking about how much money he has. That makes sense why she's the one who's like, a special license! And everyone else is like, whatever, we're gonna get married when we get married.
Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Bennet's starting to take pains to get to know Darcy and actually put in some effort to sit and talk with him. And it's just like these two lines of Elizabeth noticing her dad trying to get acquainted with Darcy. But it fills me up with so much imagery of him like sitting down and talking to the awkward turtle and being like, okay, I'm an owl and I read books. What do you read, Mr. Turtle? And it's so sweet in that moment of kind of like, aw, you care.
Well, it's nice too, because we know that Darcy reads. So I'm hopeful that they could have some common ground on that. Think back to those scenes where Darcy is reading and Caroline Bingley being really awkward and talking to him about reading versus two people who were truly passionate about reading. The imagery that comes to mind that I think about when I read those lines.
So you think this is two book lovers being like, oh my God, did you read the new book?
Not that level of fandom or freak out, but more an appreciation for, like, they can both recognize, oh, these are good authors, or oh, we're just going to sit in silence and read together, and that's going to be really pleasant.
Yeah, and then he says that he admires all three of his son-in-laws.
Yeah, and Wickham the most. And I had this moment, and I wrote down, sarcasm? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Because I was 90% sure he was being sarcastic. There was 10% of me that was like, I don't know, Mr. Bennet's a weird dude. He might really like Wickham. Who knows? There's something about it that I was like, is he joking?
And I think it goes back to, he's ranking the men in his daughter's lives. And by saying that Wickham is his favorite, he's saying he's the worst of the lot, and therefore I like him best. Basically, Mr. Bennet is being sarcastic here. It's the same thing he said around Collins. And he enjoys having people in his life that he feels superior to, I think, is a piece of it. And Bingley and Darcy are not going to give him the space to feel superior or feel like the dad or the authority figure. So he doesn't like them as much, sarcastically. Yeah, and then we get some flirty flirt.
It's so sweet that, like, Lizzie's just teasing him the entire time. And she's like, tell me about you falling in love with me. I want to know more about this. Let's talk. And this line, just my heart. I was in the middle before I knew that I had begun. They always talk about like falling in love and those feelings. And I think that's reflected in this a little bit, but also that feeling of, and then one day you just kind of wake up and you're like, oh, damn it, I love this person. And it can be kind of a slow creep up on you. You're not watching yourself fall in love with someone. It just happened.
Love at first sight is so rare.
Right. And that, like, it was a slow build up. And then he was in love.
Their flirting is still arguing. Because Lizzie's like, admit it. It's because I was mean to you. And nobody's mean to you. You love me for my impertinence. And he's like, for the liveliness of your spirit.
Lizzie's like, you may as well call it impertinence at once. She's like, let's not kid each other. You can be very sweet about this, but I was really mean to you.
Mm-hmm. You were sick of people being nice to you. So you liked someone who told you off.
Yeah, well, and Darcy's a little bit older than Lizzie. He's been in society for quite some time. He's had plenty of women clearly throw themselves at his feet because he's a very wealthy man. I mean, we watch Carolyn Bingley do it a ton, unsuccessfully. And Liz is like, yeah, that's boring. You were bored.
And I think it's really cute that after she gives this long speech, he is like, what about your behavior towards Jane at Netherfield? Obviously, he did find her sisterly affection something that made him like her. And yes, there's a liveliness in her mind that he obviously likes because he likes to argue. But I think it's really cute that in this, they're arguing in such a sweet way. It's banter versus what her parents do, which is fight. Yeah. And then Lizzie's like, my good qualities are under your protection. And I just think that's such a sweet way of framing the trust that you put into a relationship, that you trust that your partner isn't necessarily going to go around and say super nice things about you, but that your partner has your back.
Yeah, your partner has your back and knows what your good qualities are and also what your faults are, but can really hold those good qualities close to them and know that they're a good thing.
And then she's like, okay, so let's talk about this now. When you first came here, what was up with that?
You were being weird. Why were you so weird?
Like, because you were weird.
I wrote down, oh, communication. I will say, I appreciate about Jane Austen's writing that not all of this could have just been solved with if they just talked to each other. Because it's much more nuanced than that. And I think sometimes I'm a big fan of rom-coms. There's always that moment where you're like, if you just spent 30 seconds talking to each other instead of making stories up in your head, there'd be no story here. But it is one of those moments where it's like, yeah, if the two of you communicated just like 5% better, yeah, you both know you were feeling awkward and embarrassed in that moment. And you couldn't because of all the layers that are in there.
So, well, they could have at the end point, but at the beginning point, if Lizzie had known the true stories about Wickham and had known that Darcy actually felt like he loved her, that wouldn't have made Lizzie love him.
No, Lizzie would have just been like, cool, you're a weird, strange dude.
He still would have come off as a douche. The story still had to happen for that love story to happen. It's just this end bit. And I love that Lizzie's explanation was, but I was embarrassed. And Darcy says, and so was I. And that it's when you try and push the two awkward turtles together and they don't know what to do.
Yes. If they had pushed it or forced it, I don't know if they would have gotten to where they are now.
There's still this sort of, in Jane Austen's mind, this wasn't miscommunication. This was an indication of love because it's, you might have talked to me more when you came to dinner. A man who had felt less might. And it's that when you are in love, communication becomes harder.
And we talked about this in the last episode, that feeling of being tongue-tied and that feeling of to be truly in love. Part of that is losing the words to know exactly what to say. And being tongue-tied and having that feeling. And that seems to be really important to Jane Austen.
Yeah.
I recognize that even though communication between them could have been better, I don't know if it changes anything. And Darcy's recognizing it probably couldn't have because I'm so in love with you. This is where we're at.
And what a shift in terms of Darcy from that first proposal where he just talked shit to this interaction and proposals that have happened, that
he has been quiet and reflective and not presuming that he's going to be successful and nervous and embarrassed and shy. And it feels so much more genuine as a genuine love versus that first proposal where he wasn't tongue-tied and it was still super awkward, but not in this sort of sweet, loving, sort of deep way.
Right. It was awkward because he was just being rude and it was awkward. And then they both recognized that Lady Catherine was really a good catalyst for them in giving Darcy hope and being able to connect the two of them. But everything she did to try and separate them really just drove the two of them together.
Lady Catherine has been of infinite use, which ought to make her happy, for she loves to be of use. And I love that Lizzie is feeling comfortable enough with Darcy to make fun of Lady Catherine. This chapter really demonstrates how much they are on the same page.
Yeah, I wrote to that sentence about Lady Catherine loving to be of use. I wrote, oh snap! It's so sassy. And it's one of those lines where, yeah, if they weren't as in love and if they weren't as close, it wouldn't be something that Lizzie could say.
Yeah, if he had that relationship that she has with the gardeners, with Lady Catherine, she wouldn't be able to be teasing in the same way.
Exactly.
But I think to have that sort of relationship, Lady Catherine would have to not be Lady Catherine.
Lady Catherine is going to be Lady Catherine for the rest of her life.
And then Darcy talks about his real purpose was coming to see her.
I know, it's so sweet. And Lizzie kind of teases him that, shall you ever have courage to announce to Lady Catherine what is to befall her? And I wrote down, no? Does he? Would anyone? But he does say, like, well, I guess I probably should. And Lizzie teases him, and if I had not a letter to write myself, I might sit by you and admire the evenness of your writing as another young lady once did. It's such a, like, rewarding callback that I physically laughed out loud because it's so sassy. I loved it so much.
And also, is Lizzie flirting with him? Because the way that Lizzie flirts with Darcy is by being mean.
And then Lizzie also writes to the gardeners. And I thought it was a really, like, fun, cute way for her to announce that she was engaged.
Yeah, and that she's happier than Jane. She only smiles. I laugh.
She recognizes that Jane's still happy, but her happiness feels different and looks different.
I do wonder if a piece of that has been that Jane has had this sort of return to joy because Bingley went away and came back and yay, happiness happened. But Lizzie no longer has to be quiet about her joy. And I wonder if it's like a little bit of that cup overfloweth sort of feeling.
And she invites them to Pemberley for Christmas, which was something that in the last letter, Mrs. Gardner was like, don't exclude us from Christmas. I'd really love to be there. And so she does, and it's really sweet.
I also think it demonstrates this innate equality that she feels towards Darcy, that she's already treating Pemberley like her home, that she feels perfectly comfortable inviting her family. From all we know, they haven't had a discussion about who they're inviting for Christmas. They're not even married yet. And she's like, hey, Pemberley's my home. She feels this comfort and equality with Darcy. It's just really nice.
We don't see Darcy's letter to Lady Catherine, but we do see Mr. Bennet's letter to Collins. And just the way he writes it, console Lady Catherine as well as you can. But if I were you, I would stand by the nephew. He has more to give. He's shutting down Collins. Don't send me advice. I really don't want that. Well, also giving Collins advice, which I just think is hilarious.
Well, and we saw how long Collins' last letter was, and that he's written back 3 lines.
Here's the news. Here's what I think. Yours sincerely.
Miss Bingley congratulates her brother, and Jane actually is affected.
Yeah, but Jane, she's not deceived, but Jane's still Jane, and she's still nice and kinder than she deserves. But I wouldn't expect anything else from Jane. If Jane was like, I'm going to hate my sister-in-law now forever, it just wouldn't be true to who she is.
It would also be fairly purposeless. She's going to have a cordial relationship with her, but she's maybe hopefully not going to give as much of herself to Miss Bingley as she did in the past.
Yeah. She's going to be a little more protective of herself. And then we find out Georgiana is just overjoyed. It just feels so sweet that Lizzie and Georgiana are going to be family.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like she's losing her place in her brother's life. She's just gaining a sister.
Exactly. And Charlotte is really excited, and they come to visit, and she's like, yeah, I had to leave because there's a bit of a storm at home with how unhappy Lady Catherine is. So here we are. We're just going to stay here for a little while because I'm really happy for you.
And I think it's really sweet, that reunion between Charlotte and Elizabeth, because Lizzie felt like they would never be good friends again. And Charlotte, who from day one called this relationship and was like, no, he loves you, Lizzie, that she gets to come back. Lizzie's so happy to see her. Maybe not her husband, but she's happy to see Charlotte. Yeah, and Darcy puts up with the Collins and the Mrs. Phillips. And then he's doing his best to be calm.
Well, and it's an interesting way to kind of end it, in that one of Darcy's biggest concerns was about Lizzie's family and how much of a pain they would be. And all of these people are attached to Lizzie, and he's handling it.
And I think the thing that he wanted to express in that first proposal, but did so badly, was, you have these horrible connections, but I will put up with them because I feel so much love for you, which is not what he actually said. He just said, you have horrible connections and I'm above you. But this is a really good demonstration that he actually is willing to put that effort in and is going to love Lizzie. And he'll put up with the messy bits too. And that Lizzie's really looking forward to when they are alone.
Everyone else can go away. I love that chapter 61 is a bit of an epilogue, because I really love those parts of like finding out what their love looks like later on down the line. And I wish we got more of that, but it's enough to satisfy me. Interestingly, they had a double wedding, didn't they?
Yeah.
That happy for all her maternal feelings was the day on which Mrs. Bennet got rid of her two most deserving daughters, which just feels really sweet that Jane and Lizzie got to share that day together.
And we get a Mrs. Bingley and a Mrs. Darcy.
I know. Ugh, the way that Jane Austen uses names is really tender. I love that Mr. Bennet in here missed his second daughter exceedingly, that he often goes to their house and really likes to do it when he's least expected.
So when we were talking about that relationship that Darcy and Mr. Bennet are going to have, I do kind of wonder, because Mr. Bennet has this playful quality about his personality, that he's showing up at his son-in-law's on the doorstep. And I just imagine Darcy being happy to see him in sort of like, your father's here again, not in a grumpy kind of way, but that it is a joke between the three of them that he shows up whenever without giving them any notice. Not that there's resentment for him showing up.
I have this feeling that before she moved into Pemberley, that it was a bit of a sad, cold place. Georgiana wasn't living there. Sounds like Darcy wasn't there all that often. It was this home that they owned. And now it feels more like a home that, like, Mr. Bennet can stop by whenever he wants. Kitty comes to visit all the time. There seems to be more energy and liveliness in the home. Yeah. There's life there again. I love that Bingley and Jane only stay at Netherfield for a year. And they're like, it is far too close to your mother and everyone else. Let's move somewhere else.
And that they move closer to Lizzie and Darcy.
30 miles is not too bad. Presumably that's a day's travel. Not horrible.
Well, and they're also two wealthy people where giving up a day to go traveling is not that big a deal. And that they probably spend a lot of time at each other's houses, and there's overnight trips and things like that. There is this shift that with these marriages and Lizzie and Jane leaving, the Bennet household has also shifted significantly. Because Mary stays home, but she has to actually interact with people more because she doesn't have that buffer that allows her to hide away. But she could still moralize over every morning visit. And as she was no longer mortified by comparisons between her sister's beauty and her own, it was suspected by her father that she submitted to the change without much reluctance. Mary's actually quite happy to be the only one at home.
She's thriving, not living in her sister's shadows.
And I do wonder if her moralizing maybe softened a little bit in that she didn't have to wear it as armor when she presented herself to the world.
And then we hear from Lydia, who essentially is like, I'm really happy for you. Can we have some money? And I feel so bad for Lydia that her life is not good.
Mm-hmm. They move a lot. Lizzie and Jane continue to help them and discharge their bills whenever they move.
Well, and it makes me sad that his affection for her soon sunk into indifference. Hers lasted a little longer. That initial infatuation, she was so in love with Wickham, or in lust with Wickham. And now that's gone, and I don't really know what Lydia has left. I don't think she really has anything left.
No, and she retained all the claims to reputation which her marriage had given her. She ran away with someone. She doesn't have a good reputation either. So there's also that aspect of things that follows Lydia wherever she goes, that Lydia can never escape her mistakes.
Yeah, Darcy tries to do his best to recognize that, like, Lydia's situation, although he probably doesn't love Lydia, that he recognizes Elizabeth does. And so he does what he can to try and accommodate Lydia without having to receive Wickham into the household.
Well, and he helps Wickham further in his profession, and he puts in extra effort because of that tie to Lydia. There's also that aspect of not having Wickham in the household because Georgiana's there.
Yeah, I mean, how awkward and horrible would that be for her? I do like that Georgiana moves in there, and she's seeing the way that Lizzie engages with Darcy, and is like, you can't talk to my brother that way. And Lizzie's like, oh, no, I can, and I do, and I will. You can't, as his sister, but I can as his wife.
Lizzie highlights for Georgiana that modeling of what healthy interaction is, what consensual teasing looks like versus just being mean. This is probably the first relationship that Georgiana has been able to witness in terms of what does a healthy romantic relationship look like. It's really sweet to think that she and Lizzie are actually having conversations about it, and they're sitting down and Georgiana's like, you're mean to him. And Lizzie's like, let me explain. And that also fills me up with like a little bit of extra joy that there's this extra sisterly bond that they're having and these in-depth conversations that are going on. Maybe even like with Darcy in the room. And I just get this image of like Darcy reading his paper after Lizzie gave him a retort and teased him. And he's just kind of sitting there smiling. And Georgiana's like, I would be in so much shit if I talked to him that way. And Lizzie just being like, it's because I'm his wife and you are his sister. We have different relationships. And Darcy just not saying anything, just like smiling there. It's just the little threesome that they are. Just, it's so sweet. Yeah, and then Lady Catherine remains indignant and she says some horrible things about Lizzie. And Darcy's just like, well, I'm never talking to her again.
But Lizzie's the one who's like, no, you should repair that. She's your aunt. Try and reconcile this, which is very sweet of Lizzie. And I did write down, why Lizzie? Why do you want this lady in your life? But I do think that Lizzie's close relations with her family might be pushing her towards that, of how much reward it brings for Lizzie to have ties with her family, and recognizing that before all of this, Darcy seemed to have an okay relationship with his aunt.
As far as we know, she's his closest relation, but there may be other aspects of the family that are influenced by Lady Catherine, and maybe this has caused a bigger breach. Like, we don't know all of those aspects. But I do like that when he reconciles with her and she decides to come, it's because she's curious about Elizabeth, and she condescended to wait on them at Pemberley in spite of the pollution which its woods had received. She said all of these horrible things, and she's the one who actually has to tuck tail and come to visit them. Yeah, and then we end with the gardeners.
It's really sweet that they have such a close, loving relationship. It's nice that two of the love connections in this end up being close with each other. And it feels like a really nice way to end things.
So that's Pride and Prejudice!
We did it!
Before I get your final thoughts on things, what was your favorite quote from these three chapters?
My favorite quote is actually from Jane when Lizzie's told her about the engagement. This line of, do anything rather than marry without affection. Ugh, my heart. It feels so nice that I know you want a love connection, so don't marry this guy unless it's a love connection. Mm-hmm. And how we should all aspire for that. That's what I want for life. It's nice that Jane's recognizing that that's what Lizzie wants for life. It's nice that Jane's recognizing that's what she has.
Yeah, it's super validating.
Do you have a favorite quote?
I would say Darcy's response about when he fell in love with her. I was in the middle before I knew it had begun. It's just such a, oh, Darcy, little baby, I want to squish you. Final thoughts?
My final thoughts on Pride and Prejudice. I will say I enjoyed it more than I think I thought I would, which is good. There was not enough dancing, so our next book should have some dancing, I hope. I get why this story is such a classic in history and why so many other stories get based off of it.
So, we're reading Northanger Abbey next. What are your predictions for that book? What do you know?
I know two things. You said it's a gothic parody, which I don't really know what those words mean. So I don't really know what to expect from that. And I know that the main male character is Mr. Tilney. I know nothing else. So presumably it's also still a love story. So someone's going to fall in love with Mr. Tilney. I don't know who. That's as far as I can predict.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. As we talked about last time, it's my comfort read. I'm really excited for it. I think it's going to have a different feel from Pride and Prejudice. It's going to give you a different glance at the way that Jane Austen can do different layers. It's maybe a little bit less dense than some parts of Pride and Prejudice. It is the first one that she wrote, but the last one to get published.
Interesting.
So it will be a really fun one to read and go through. And then maybe you'll love Mr. Tilney as much as I do.
We will wait and see.
It's not the most popular. Some people really love it and some people just hate it. So it will be interesting to see where you fall. I'm really interested to get the perspective of someone who hasn't read it before. We probably will not be starting that season of things until late October or November because somebody is taking a break in September.
Yeah, I'm going to be rafting the Grand Canyon and be out of contact for 20 days. And so, yeah, I think end of October, early November, we'll be back with some episodes.
Yeah, and we've got lots of content. We could keep doing Pride and Prejudice stuff for forever. There's so many books based off of this. There's so many adaptations. We will probably start with the movie and the miniseries, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Do you have any other final thoughts as we wrap up this season?
It has been so enjoyable to have you along reading this with me. I strongly suggest for anyone, if you have someone in your life who hasn't read Jane Austen, to start a podcast with them and force them to read your favorite books, because it's really enjoyable to sit down with someone and just talk about it bit by bit as you go through things. I mean, you don't have to go as full on as we've gone, but it's been so much fun and I've really enjoyed the fact that you were forced to talk with me about Jane Austen. So it's been really good and really fun, and just want to say thank you for everyone who's come along the way with us. We're so glad. We love all of the comments and we're always surprised that we have a fandom. So thank you to everyone who has listened along the way. We hope you enjoyed the journey along with us. And I hope you're as excited as I am that we converted Teresa into a Jane Austen lover.
I think part of what I've really loved about this is sharing this with you and sharing this with everyone who listens, to be able to just talk through what's going on in my mind and what's going on as a first-time reader through this. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, as always, you can follow us on Instagram at Austen Therapy Podcast. You can also follow my meme account at Austen Therapy. And If you would like, leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We have been so grateful for everybody who has left us comments and told us that they enjoy things. So thank you as much to Teresa as to everybody who has listened along the way.
And as much to you too, Kate.
Aww. We love you all, and we will see you when we read Northanger.